We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, verses 35 to 40. I'll sing verse 35. Esham kosha nivasinam utapavam kidevarate tinas cheto vishwafala falam taraparam kitapyayan muhyati savesha riva putanapi sakulatam eva devapita. Translation: My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? So what do you remember from the last class? Yes. Many meanings of Mukunda.
The new meaning we learned about is prema.
Right. Prema is also a giver of prema, Mukunda.
And smiling.
And smiling face.
Like a flower.
Like a flower, Kunda flower. Yes?
Just about is more involved in any material benediction.
Dust of Vrindavan is more important than any material benediction. Yes?
And the sweepers of
Vrindavan are great personalities. And yes, Krishna? Humility of Lord Brahma is quite amazing. Although he is the greatest person, his whole body is the whole universe, and he just wants to be a speck of dust in Vrindavan. How humble. Yes. Right. You don't get this in Satyaloka where you get everything. Yes. Right. So the Brijbasis can experience the sweetness of Krishna through all the senses, and Brahma only, all the demigods only through one sense. So the demigods from Vaikuntha are coming to experience the rasas of Vrindavan. Nama? Okay. So he didn't praise Srimati Radharani because he considered himself a son and felt like it was inappropriate. And he also hadn't realized that level of rasa yet. Madhu, Amrita, and Asava, which is lotus feet, were different categories, different things.
Madhu for human beings, for bees.
Okay, for the bees of the mind, you get the madhu of Krishna's lotus feet. Okay, let's see what Sanatan Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Lord Brahma is amazed at the indescribable perfection of the Brijbasis, whose unique devotion makes Krishna completely indebted to them. But Krishna might ask, how can I ever become insolvent, incapable of clearing a debt? How can I be incapable of clearing a debt? Krishna has everything, spiritual, material. He's all-powerful. Whatever a person requires from Krishna, regardless of circumstance, he gives. He should be able to give. In Brahma's opinion, however, Krishna cannot repay the Brijbasis properly, not even by giving them his own self. Because Putana was an envious demon who took pleasure in murdering babies, disguised as a respectable lady, she entered the company of Krishna's devotees just to kill him. Yet she obtained Krishna as her son. In other words, Krishna gave himself to her. Krishna, however, might propose he did more for the Brijbasis than merely give himself, because he gave himself to all the relatives as well. But this too he did for Putana. Baka and Aga were her brothers, and other demons sent to Brijbhikamsa were her close friends. And true as it may be, the main cause of their salvation was their contact with Krishna. They achieved even that contact by virtue of being related to Putana. So Putana is the one who is giving the mercy to all the other demons because of Putana. They're getting the mercy. How favored then must Putana have been? Thus Brahma considers inadequate Krishna's payment of giving the Brijbasis only himself, because they have surrendered to his service their homes and everything they have. Krishna also gives himself to demons, so what makes pure devotional service to him more desirable than the demonic behavior? Certainly the Brijbasis deserve better. So this is Brahma's reasoning. And yes, it is fact. What did I do with that little book? Something in here. Also about this. Let's see what Sachinanda Swami comments on these things. 46. Okay. Let us meditate a little on the mercy which Krishna gave to Putana. Putana was only disguised as a devotee. Like I am also only disguised as a devotee. So here's the lesson that Sachinanda Swami wants to make to us, that yes, she imitated a devotee. She disguised herself. So she was not a real devotee. And Uddhava also says the same thing, aho bhakiyam, that how can I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, although she was unfaithful and prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. So we should also get hope, and this is what Maharaj's point. Putana Lila is Lord Krishna's first merciful Lila on this planet. This pastime is very attractive to devotees because when they hear about it, they begin to think, oh, I also have a chance. Maybe I'm also disguised as a devotee. Maybe I'm not a real devotee. Maybe I'm just imitating. My shika is just a nice ornamentation, or my sari is just a nice dress. I don't think of Krishna always, but Krishna accepts even pretenders. So devotees begin to feel extremely happy when they hear this lila, thinking they also have a chance. So Krishna's first lila is the super mercy lila of Putana. The devotees dance up and down when they hear how Krishna killed Putana, because from this lila we learn our disqualifications are not taken into account. So that's our hope. We make mistakes, but Krishna doesn't, he sees the good. Only, here it says, only one qualification is taken in account. We have come to Krishna. Putana had only one qualification. She had come to Krishna. So we meditate. Then he gives a prayer by Rupa Goswami. I'm very weak and lazy to do even the smallest devotional service. So when I hear of the peerless and difficult to perform services performed by the great devotees in ancient times, my heart burns with despair. Still, O Lord Kila of Agasura, when I hear your waves of mercy splash everyone, from the demigod Brahma down to the most insignificant creature, my heart becomes sprinkled with a cooling drop of hope. So he says, Rupa Goswami says, when he hears about Shukadev leaving his home at 16 years of age, when he hears about King Ambarish, who had so much to do as a king, but still used his time to serve the Lord in the temple, he feels he has no chance. He says, oh, my stony heart is devoid of devotion and grows despondent upon hearing about the arduous process of self-realization and devotional discipline undertaken by great souls like Shukadeva Goswami and Ambarish Maharaj. I feel hopeless and incapable, but looking around me, once more I see the waves of mercy you showered upon Lord Brahma and upon even the most fallen reprobates. This gives me renewed hope and soothes my troubled heart. So we should always meditate on Krishna's mercy. Of all the 64 qualities, Bhakta Vatsala, merciful friend of devotees, is most important for us. That's our quality. Because if we think of our qualifications, what are they? Not so many. So when we hear only by approaching Krishna, he's so merciful, inclined to his devotees, we think, okay, there's some hope for me.
But it's mostly approaching Krishna through Mahaprabhu.
Through Mahaprabhu, exactly. We heard that from Jagannath Das Babaji. Yes, the way to get the mercy is through Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. They're the representatives of mercy. So, there's another thing in this Brihadbhagavatamrita. Let me see, back here somewhere. Oh, I've got a flower stuck in the place. Yes, it's about Putana. Putana dressed herself very nicely, so Yashoda and the other ladies of Braj would accept her as one of them, a cultured Vaishnava. That was enough to satisfy Krishna, even though she was a most wicked demon. And not only Putana, but many of her demon friends and relatives were like Aga, Baka, and Kamsa, were liberated simply by being drawn to Krishna's supremely charming childhood pastimes. Kamsa, even he got the mercy. Oh. So, the question remains, well, okay, we'll read what, before we ask that question, let's read what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. Conversation between Brahma and Krishna. Brahma may ask, O Lord, perhaps you do not want to clearly say if I may attain the dust of the feet of the inhabitants of Braj or not. Remember, his last prayer was, please give me the dust. And he's a little bit doubtful. Okay, you don't want to tell me if I get the dust or not. Well then, please answer one other question that is on my mind. What reward will you give the residents of Braj? Okay, don't worry about me. What are you going to give them? Krishna replied, Brahma, though you know all the truths of the Vedas, can't you understand the answer? Brahma said, our minds are bewildered about this. By using the plural form, our, Brahma means not only my heart, the hearts of Shiva, for Kumaras, Narada, and all the wise philosophers are bewildered. What are you going to do for the Brijbasis? Krishna said, exactly what is the state of your minds? Brahma said, although with great intelligence we searched in all times and places, our minds have become bewildered, trying to think of what type of reward you could give them. There is no reward superior to you, and you have already given yourself eternally to the Brijbasis as their son and other intimate loving relationships. If something better than you existed, you would have given it to the people of Braj. However, no such thing exists. That's why our minds are now bewildered. Krishna says, oh, Krishna has such a clever answer. Wait, you see what he says. He says, Brahma, you are really ignorant of the truth. Knowing that the Brijbasis that would manifest such astonishing spontaneous love for me, I have in advance given myself to them as their son, friend, or lover, and they are satisfied with this. So he's already paid them in advance. So whatever happens, he's already paid. This is what he's saying. Like if you pay somebody in advance. Others may be grateful for gifts that have already been given, but I'm grateful for gifts that will be given in the future, and I reciprocate with these gifts even before they are given. So there. I know they're going to give everything, so I already gave myself first. So that's what he says. Brahma says, that is true, my lord. You are certainly doing what is proper. But though Putana was sinful, what about Putana? Just by imitating a devotee, she and all her family attained you personally. But the inhabitants of Braj, who out of great affection gave up all attachments like house, wealth, friends, pleasurable objects, body and mind for you, also attained you. First you gave yourself to the degraded sinner Putana, and then you gave yourself to the Brijbasis, who are the exalted crest jewels of all saintly persons. Since you already given yourself to Putana, you can't rightly give yourself again as a gift to someone else. That's Brahma. Brahma's reasoning. In essence, this is highly improper. Therefore, you are now in debt to the residents of Braj. Brahma communicated this message by the movements of his nose, eyes, eyebrows, and neck. So they weren't actually speaking, but there was a conversation going on with signals. Signals here. Okay. So the question is, was Krishna actually in debt to the residents of Braj or not? That is the question. Yes. Could he repay his debt? No. Napariyaham. So there are three ways. Actually, the commentators, they quote Bhagavad Gita, yayata mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. that I reciprocate, as they worship me, I reciprocate accordingly. But according to the commentators, Krishna has broken this promise, especially in relationship to the gopis. So, three ways. And this I got from Mathura Meets Vrindavan. Yes, but it will go into it a lot more next year. There will be other reasons too, but there are three reasons I got there. So can anybody give me a reason how he could not, or why he could not repay the gopis who gave everything? Adiprush.
The gopis' love was exclusive.
Yes, that's one reason, yes.
They focus on one person only.
Yes. Yeah, not only them, it's the commentators say he's got unlimited devotees, so his attention is not one-pointed. The gopis' attention on Krishna is one-pointed. They only see Krishna, but Krishna has on trillions and millions of devotees, and so he's not one-pointed. He has all of them. That's one reason. Yes? Right, they left everything. They gave up everything for Krishna. What did Krishna give up for them? What did he give up? What did he renounce? They renounced everything. So renunciation, on the level of renunciation, he can't pay them back. And there's a really interesting comment by Gaura Govinda Maharaj. I'm sure he got it from the commentators. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharman Parityaja, Mahamikam Sharanam Vraja. And he said the gopis, they actually gave up all their dharma. They gave up everything for Krishna. And he said the Vedic dharma for the women, married women, is that you're not allowed to cross the threshold of the house, which I didn't know. That's quite interesting. You're not allowed to go out of the house for married women. And they did that. They went out. He crossed the threshold and went to Krishna. So they gave up all the Vedic dharma. And Krishna advises this in Bhagavad Gita, so it's not something strange. So that is the renunciation. Then there's a third thing, third reason. Yes. Okay, they didn't care about their name. All right. And the other reason given here is that they don't want anything from Krishna. So what can he give them? They don't want anything. How can he repay them? If somebody says, I'm going to pay you back, he says, I don't want. How are you going to repay them? I don't want anything. Yes. We're talking about the young gopis.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's the source of all this good qualities. He's the source of all love, all good qualities. Nothing belongs to anybody but him.
That's true. But in Vrindavan, nobody knows the philosophy. they don't think like that. They don't think. They don't think also.
So in that sense, he says that to them.
Yeah.
According to their understanding.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't think, oh, Krishna is. Of course, some people try to tell them that, you know, but they're not going to believe it. Uddhava comes and he tries to tell them the philosophy, but nobody appreciates it. Nobody appreciates his philosophy. Yes, in the back, Krishna mind. Bhagavad Gita 4:11, that I reciprocate according to their worship. Yes, I reciprocate accordingly. So here he says, I cannot reciprocate this. I'm not part of Yaham. He admits it. He admits it in the 32nd chapter. I cannot reciprocate your love.
But they wanted Krishna, gopis, young gopis.
Right.
They wanted Krishna as their husband, as their beloved. So Krishna also couldn't give himself to them as a beloved, as a
No, they don't want him. They want
to satisfy them, being all gopis' husband. He became husband of all these gopis. Yeah. So somehow he satisfies them. He paid some debt.
Actually, there is an answer to the question. He did repay the debt, but not
complete.
No, he did completely. Does anybody know the answer? How did he repay? Hare Purush. Yes. He came as Lord Chaitanya. He gave up everything. He had the same. He took their role. So he was crying like they were crying all the time. When Krishna left Mathura, then Lord Chaitanya was crying. Just like the gopis. So he actually did repay, in one sense, that he did come as them. And he experienced their feelings. And in that sense, but as Krishna, he could not. He could not repay them. He remained the debtor. Yes?
Regarding you were quoting Gopagina Maharaj, 1866, he says, Sadaranam Parichaja Mamikam Sharanam Praja. So he says actually 1866 points out to Braja Bhakti.
Braj Bhakti, yeah.
Mamikam Sharanam Praja.
Yes, Mamikam Sharanam Vraja. Braj. Yeah, I've heard that. And at the end of the 10th canto, it gives different opulences of Krishna. And one of the opulences of Krishna is that he gave liberation not only to his surrendered devotees, but also to his enemies. So there's like some very special qualities of Krishna only. And this is described at the end of the 10th canto, I think 10:90-47. So this is shown, illustrated in this verse here. And this is a proof of that one special quality of Krishna. So in the Brihadbhagavatamrita first volume, this is talked about Krishna's kindness. Even the punishments Krishna gives are worthy of praise. And the witnesses are Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, and in the more distant past, Bali and others. So even the punishments he gives are worthy of praise. Krishna allowed Putana to enter Gokul respectably, appearing among the cowherds just as a first-class lady. And when we heard that, remember the sixth chapter, Shukadeva was saying that wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing, there cannot be any danger from bad elements, so there is no need for anxiety about Gokul, while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. So in other words, the witch Putana posed no threat to the inhabitants of Gokul. Krishna allowed her to enter simply to give her his mercy. Just for mercy. There is no danger. Yes.
How do we explain then that this attack to Manipur temple in the middle of Janmashtami?
How do we explain then the attack of the Manipur temple in the middle of Janmashtami? How does that relate to Putana?
Because it's just said.
Oh, there's no danger wherever you're chanting Hare Krishna. I guess you would have to look at it from the perspective of eternal time. Yes. Well, also, where did those people who were meditating on Ras Lila and died, where did they go? Ras Lila was happening. And in the middle of the Ras Lila, some people left. They left their bodies in the middle of Ras Lila. So, you can look at it, you can look at it like other people will say, how can, Krishna allow these things to happen to devotees? Yes? Just the same, what I think of when I hear that question is, how could Krishna allow Kamsa to kill all the children of Devaki, who is the mother of Krishna? Babies, infants. I know, we know what they are, but how could Krishna allow it? So if you look at it on that level, if you look at it, you can look at it on that level. Yes. Well, I think you'll have to think about it Anybody else have an answer? This is
all the battles full of
Kurukshetra. Yes. Yeah. Yes? Nama? Yeah, we have to understand also the protection. The main protection is spiritual. And that's the thing. We can lose our lives, but we don't want to lose our spiritual protection. It's the main thing. And that the protection is eternal. Protection is eternal. So, yes, how we... it's not a very auspicious way to die, in one sense, because of the violence and all that. But in another sense, it was auspicious. So who is to judge about actually what was happening?
See,
yeah.
At first sight, it doesn't
look... Yeah, look how Tamal Krishna is.
Very violent.
And people, some people even use that as an example.
Of
I don't know what, but something of, you know... You know, what is the use of being a devotee? You know, whatever. People will criticize.
He was chanting.
Of course he was chanting. One of his disciples asked me that question also, how come, you know, such a death? And my answer was, well, Prabhupada couldn't wait for him to die. Prabhupada needed his help right away, so he just called him immediately to... Pramalochan. Yeah, what did Pramalochan see? In the sky, right? That
morning.
Right. See, I've got more things for you to do. So this is, yes. How could these things, how could Draupadi be attempted to be disrobed? And so, and Krishna's their friend, their close friend. Yes. Okay. Brings the devotees closer together, and there's an increase. Same thing happened in Juhu when they attacked and destroyed the temple, the first temporary temple. Then, you know, it brought people together like anything. And they built it like in one night, overnight, they built the next thing. And then the Prabhupada said, okay, now we get all the life members together and we protest and so many things. Prabhupada went there. Or no, he wasn't. He was in Calcutta when it happened. I think I was in Calcutta and Prabhupada was there, and he was telling them, "Okay, now you have to, you know, get all the life, make a meeting with the life members and this and that." Yeah. Mm-hmm. Preaching goes most explosively in those countries where it's forbidden. Yes. Yeah, I couldn't believe, you know, how many devotees in Russia where it was forbidden, isn't it? They've got the most devotees in the world, I think, now.
And
yes. The old devotees. Older. Open the door for Yashoda. I don't think she...
Well, she should go inside.
I know. She's not going to hear.
This happened also in Juhu. After the opening, when we had this attack.
You were there, yes. Come in, Yashoda. It's too cold to keep the doors open today. No, it's not the day to sit outside. So in Juhu, yes?
Yeah.
Oh, that was after Prabhupada, that was another incident after Prabhupada left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were under house arrest. We weren't allowed to leave the Prabhupada.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Yes? Krishna has his ways. Of course, when it happens to us, then we don't appreciate it that much. Sometimes.
It was really intense.
Yeah. Yes?
They are taking a lot of security measures on the 26th of January.
Yes. So they'll come another day, don't worry. Yes. Where is this?
In West Ukraine.
In Western Ukraine?
Yeah. Huh.
So the devotees, they come more together, yes, when you're attacked from the outside, and you're more to get, you brings devotees together. So Krishna book, let's see what Prabhupada says. Even Putana, I think how you're so kind, so magnanimous, even Putana, who came to cheat you, by dressing herself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation in the actual post of a mother. And other demons belonging to the same family, like Agasura and Bakasura, are also favored with liberation and achieved you. Under the circumstances, I'm puzzled. These residents of Vrindavan have given everything, so how will you be able to repay your debt to them? I surmise you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. So that is the conclusion of Lord Brahma. He will always remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami comments the importance of devotees in that just the imitation of a devotee is glorious. What to speak of a devotee? Yes, we've got our security standards here. Okay. So, now what? Someone may object. This is for the next verse. Jiva Goswami. He's bringing up always the objections. Someone may object, saying the residents of Vrindavan are ordinary householders and conditioned souls, for they manifest all the ordinary material attachments to family and home that are manifested by ordinary creatures. They are not great sages or renounced sannyasis. How is it possible, therefore, they are eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So this is Grihastha versus Sannyasi. How can you say they're the best? Now we're talking about the mother and father and everybody. In order to answer this objection, Brahma replies, because the residents of Vrindavan are immersed in love for Krishna, they cannot be at all encumbered by material desires or attachments as the conditioned souls are. Brahma explains this in the next verse, where he contrasts the condition of materially contaminated living entities with that of the pure devotees of Vrindavan. Now, Sridhar Swami takes it another way, and he has another objection. He says, but the Lord may object. Even for those sannyasis who have become free from all faults of attachment, there exists nothing superior to me. So why is my dealing with these devotees of Vrindavan inadequate? And that is also, the next verse is an answer to this question, this objection. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, so all of them have three different comments for the next verse. These householders are described by sannyasis to be fallen into the network of material existence consisting of their sons, wives, and so on, yet they are present as householders, having a son like you and spouses like your devotees. But even those householders living in other places outside Vrindavan who are your devotees are better than sannyasis, as stated in the verse beginning Tavat. So this verse is praising Grihastha devotees who live even outside of Vrindavan, even not the Brijbasis. They're better than sannyasis, Mayavari sannyasis. 36. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. So if you're not a devotee, you're living in your prison with your foot shackles and thieves, if you're not a devotee. Purport, apparently the residents of Vrindavan, abode of Lord Krishna, are simple householders, engaged in ordinary affairs such as herding cows, cooking, rearing children, and performing religious ceremonies. However, all these activities are intensely engaged in loving service of Lord Krishna. Residents of Vrindavan perform all activities in pure Krishna consciousness and thus exist on the most exalted platform of liberated life. Otherwise, the same activities performed without Krishna consciousness constitute ordinary bondage to the material world. So as one should not misunderstand the exalted position of residents of Vrindavan, nor one should consider oneself highly religious simply because one performs ordinary domestic affairs very enthusiastically, but without Krishna consciousness. And there are many people in this world who think like that, even Indians in India. Quote Bhagavad Gita, saying, what is it, 247. What is it, how does it start? Karma eva dikaraste. Na mafaleshu. Of course, not the second line, where you give up the fruits to Krishna. Okay. By focusing our passionate attachment on our family and society, we are completely deviated from the progressive path of Krishna consciousness. Conversely, if we engage our family in loving service of the Lord, our endeavors to maintain our family become part and parcel of our progressive spiritual duties. Who's an example of that in recent history? Bhaktivinoda Thakur. 10, 11, 12 kids, I lose count. So many children, and he's working as a judge. And when you read his prayers, he says, yes, I am the servant in your house, and it's your family. And I'm just a servant here. And I'm maintaining your family. I'm the caretaker. So that's the example. In conclusion, by studying the extraordinary status of residents of Vrindavan, we can see that the essential quality of their lives is pure Krishna consciousness, rendering loving service to the Lord without a trace of material desire or mental speculation. Or as Bhairajan Prabhu would say, not a sesame seed of material desire or mental speculation. Such loving service to the original personality of Godhead immediately creates the atmosphere of Shivindavan Dham, kingdom of God. So let's see what Sanatan Goswami says on this verse. Here Brahma responds to a question Krishna might ask. Why should the Brijbasis expect any more from him than do the sannyasis who have renounced everything? Renunciates who have freed themselves from all material contamination obtain nothing more than Krishna. So, why shouldn't the Brijasis also be happy by having just him? Brahma answers by reminding Krishna, material desires like thieves rob their victims of discernment, determination, and other assets. And the home in which one lives with a spouse and children is a prison. The infatuations of love keep one forever from escaping. Successful sannyasis deserve credit for somehow avoiding these thieves and securing release from the prison of home life. They get that credit. The Vrijbasis, however, are much more praiseworthy because their homes, attachments, and desires and the love they share among themselves actually free them from bondage. Brahma argues, therefore, the Brijbasis deserve a greater reward for their worship of the Supreme than impersonal sannyasis. Yes, and Prabhupada was saying on one tape, Shankaracharya said, words are useless, don't talk. First take sannyas and then we'll talk. We won't talk to anyone unless they're, first you take sannyas. And then we'll talk about spiritual life. Then we'll discuss Vedanta. And so that was the Vedic path. Take sannyas and then discuss Vedanta. But no, here they have Vedanta personified as their son and lover. As we have already heard from the authoritative statements of Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures, the spiritual achievements of non-devotee renunciants are similar to those of demons like Kamsa. Yeah, they go to the Brahmajyoti. Such demons intensely concentrated on Krishna while striving to destroy him. Being directly killed by Krishna elevated them to the status of liberation, oneness with Brahman, which in effect is attainment of the Lord, because Brahman is one of the personality of Godhead's own opulences. But still, there is a great difference between impersonal liberation and perfection Vaishnavas achieve. Whew. Brahma's apparently simple prayer can be understood in several different ways. So we got a few ways already, and there are several different more ways to understand this simple prayer. One is that Brahma is answering a potential doubt about why the Brijbasis, full as they are with attachments and desires, are more praiseworthy than more exemplary Vaishnavas who are renounced. Now he's not talking impersonalists, he's talking about Vaishnava sannyasis, who are renounced both in their external behavior and in the core of their hearts. Here Brahma argues, although material attachments corrupt anyone who has not developed a personal relationship with Krishna, Krishna's devotees have learned the value of devotional service to him, so they dovetail the same attachments in a spiritually constructive way. Without devotion for, now it's strict sannyasis without devotion for Krishna practice renunciation in vain. because none of their disciplines will bear the desired fruit. Most likely, the results of their labor will be pride and self-delusion. In contrast, the unlimited desires held by every devotee of Krishna can never be satiated, for they're all in relationship with Krishna. They feel like they never had enough of Krishna. Whew. So then, he gives so many explanations. Ah, here's a very sweet explanation, which actually is relevant for all of us. When one reads the grammar differently, Krishna will be anxious until everyone in the universe becomes his devotee. Krishna will be anxious. Until then, Krishna's attachments and desires will be like thieves that rob him of his mental equilibrium and self-satisfaction. So this is a very interesting point. Krishna is Atmarama. But at the same time, he's not Atmarama. Because he wants you to come back to Godhead. And until you come back, he won't be satisfied. In one sense, he's Atmarama. He's completely satisfied. In another sense, he's not Atmarama. Because he's worried about us. He wants us to come. Until then, Krishna's attachments and desires will be like thieves that rob him of his mental equilibrium and self-satisfaction. And his abodes in Vaikuntha and elsewhere will be like prisons, because the company of those who constantly live with him will restrict his freedom. Oh, it's talking about Vaikuntha now. The special affection he has for Mahalakshmi and others in Vaikuntha will be like foot shackles that restrict his movement and prevent him from always enjoying the company of his dearest devotees. He will not feel the ecstasies of intimate reciprocation, therefore, now we're back with the Brijbasis, but only the pains of separation. So this is a prediction. Brahma predicts after Krishna leaves the Brijbasis to go to Mathura, he'll always feel separation from them and always remain indebted. So many ways, and I didn't even read all the ways, to understand this one prayer of Lord Brahma. He can't. Well, we'll find out why. He does do that. He doesn't leave Vrindavan. He stays. He doesn't leave Vrindavan.
Uppercut Lila.
He doesn't. Yes, he does do that. No. It's not frustrating. It's the highest ecstasy of separation. But because we see with material eyes, therefore we don't appreciate. You have to come back next year to find out the answers to all these questions. Because they will be there in the Bhagavatam next year. And it will be in Uddhava Sandesh and in those chapter 46, 47. And also later on. Also later on, these answers will come. So, this is telling the two sides, if you surrender and if you don't surrender to Krishna, what will happen? Prahlad Maharaj is quoted by Jiva Goswami, "The foolish materialists take great delight in the contact of the senses with the sense objects. O Lord, I pray that the same attachment may be manifested towards you, that I may always remember you and perceive you with my senses. May the attachment to you never leave my heart." If Prahlad Maharaj and other great devotees have completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, may remain in family life, apparently attached to family and home, why should anyone think simply because residents of Vrindavan are householders and not renounced sannyasis, therefore they cannot be eternal associates of the Lord? So this is more for the Mayavadi sannyasis who say you must take sannyas. Okay. What else? Someone may ask, why does the Supreme Lord appear in this way as a small child? To this question, the following answer is given. Lord Krishna seems like an ordinary child and performs activities that seem like those of an ordinary child in order to grant transcendental bliss to devotees who become his associates. Okay. So let's read what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. This is verse 36. Okay. Well, I think it's actually pretty much the same. Oh, yeah. So here, Lord Krishna may protest. The sannyasis will object. The inhabitants of Brija are householders, fallen. Brahma replies, yes, that is true for most materialistic grihasthas. However, what to speak of the householders of Braj? Even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to these sannyasi critics. Statement by Vishnath. Attachment, hatred, and other material emotions are great thieves because they steal the great treasure of pure bliss from the soul. Then he talks about being bound to karma. As long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. However, when they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti and aversion to things obstructing bhakti, and then they repose all their love in you. In this way, the thieves of material attraction, hatred, and love become sanctified by becoming fixed in you and help the devotee by giving him spiritual bliss, knowledge, and a host of advantages. And that way, the same home, which was formerly a prison cell created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions, becomes for your devotee a place filled with service to you by hearing and chanting your glories and a host of other activities meant to please you. So this is very nice. Then he quotes Bhagavatam 4:22-40. The ocean of nations is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. The residents of Braj have thousands of times more love for you than householders who live in other places. Okay. So this is Vishwanath's comments here. We'll go to the next verse. So here we're back on the same topic. Someone may say, if the residents of Vrindavan are free from bondage of material existence, why do they seem like ordinary inhabitants of the material world? In order to answer this objection, Brahma explains the appearance and activities of both Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan are spiritual. Only superficially do they appear to be material. So then the next verse. Papancha nishprapancha pi vidam vaisi bhutale papana janatananda sandoham titum papo. My dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. So Krishna doesn't need to come. He simply comes to please his devotees. Oh, beautiful purport. Quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just as a lamp does not seem to shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in the shade, or as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver platter as it does on a plate of blue glass, the Lord's pastimes as Govinda do not seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha as they do within the material realm of Maya. So, putting Krishna's pastimes here in the material world is like having the lamp shining in the shade, in the darkness. A lamp in darkness, or a diamond on a blue glass. It's more brilliant than his pastimes in the spiritual world. So all the universes are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu, and we heard that in the first 9 cantos, but this canto is even more extraordinary. Why is that? It's in a different atmosphere. Yeah, for sure.
So it's like in the spiritual world, everybody's favorable to serving Krishna. In the material world, everybody's adverse.
Yeah, it's a whole other world. Right? It's a whole other world, actually. Anything else?
Krishna's pastimes are different.
Krishna's pastimes? Yes? Anything else? Yes? You showed it. Yes. That was what, yes. The residents of Vrindavan, they're selfless. And we heard about all the big power in the first nine cantos, but they're captivating that power. The residents of Vrindavan are more powerful than the incarnations and the gods we heard about in the previous nine cantos. They are captivating, they are controlling that person. Krishna Supini? Oh, okay. This is why material world is more. Yes. Okay. Let's see. I'll just read a few comments by Sanatan Goswami. Krishna might explain. He comes to Braja not only to enjoy pastimes with his devotees, but also to become their relative. In this way, by imitating the ways of material life, he intends to increase the ecstasy of his devotees. But Brahma thinks merely putting on a superficial show of being a son or other family member is not enough to absolve his debt. So we're back on the debt again. And that, no, even you become their son, you can't pay them back. And then another question, if reinterpreted as a rhetorical question, asks whether Krishna is becoming the son on earth isn't in fact an illusion, a false show. And the answer, Brahma implies, of course not. Krishna proves the seriousness of his intentions. He shows he intends to enlighten, not delude, by displaying before Mother Yashoda his universal form. So he's not coming here to delude Mother Yashoda, he's coming to enlighten her with his universal form. And other ways revealing to his devotees his identity as the Supreme Lord. It's not, you can't say that he didn't tell them, he didn't show them. Nobody can say he didn't show that he was, he showed. Yes, here's my universal form. See who I am. Not only the bridge basis, but anyone who comes in contact with Krishna is relieved of material delusion, for Krishna cannot hide his true nature from his devotees. And then Sanatana Goswami says, Krishna comes to share with his devotees the highest degrees of ecstasy, whereas on other planets like Swarga, the corresponding exchanges, such as those between Aditi and her son, Vamanadev, are hampered by over-awareness of his supremacy. So Aditi knew that Vamanadev was God. So she couldn't really have the same love that Yashoda had for Krishna, who didn't know. If even in Brajbhumi Krishna were known to be God, then how would he ever repay his debt to the Brijbasis? Yes. So that is, next year. Next year's topic. When Uddhava comes to tell Nanda, actually your son is the Supreme Lord. So don't lament, he's everywhere. He said, I should lament more if I, now he's God, I lost God for my son. Then I shouldn't cry more. This is, this is what's going on here. What's he saying here? And he's saying, yes. She followed. What do you mean she didn't follow? Well, they tried to pacify her, as good husbands will. But then he gave her the instruction to do this worship.
He gave a second instruction, which was like inferior.
Well, who can say if it was inferior? This is Kashyapa. They all start with the K. It's confusing. Kashyapa. Yeah, for Vamana. Yeah, it's not. She wanted the Lord for her son, and that was not recommended by Prabhupada in his purports.
Oh, it's a reason.
Oh, she wanted the kingdom for her sons. Yeah, she wanted the kingdom back. Right, that was her motive. You don't know how strong is the attachment of the mother for the sons until you're a mother yourself. And they'll do anything. So, yes?
You said she was attached to Vamanadev as Yashoda was attached to...
No, I said she wasn't. Anyway, yes, let's keep going on this topic here. Okay. So what does Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur? Again, he brings up the illusion point, which is replied to in this verse. Now, here's something else. Although nisprapancha, transcendental to material existence, you're always present on the surface of the earth and are imitating material existence, imitating the condition of a sun, and so on, as may be found within material life. In the same way as mundane sons and so on act toward their mundane fathers and so on, similarly you're acting. So that your assumption of the relationship of father and son and so on is not unreal, as is the same on the part of the jivas. Because you're beyond material existence, you're acting as a son is real and eternal. Now, the Mayavadis say all these things are false. The relationship of mother and son, father and son, it's all false. Any relationships, any feelings, it's all false. But we say, no, there is a real relationship, and that is with Krishna. He is our eternal son, our eternal husband, our eternal father. Whatever we're looking for, it's Krishna, because he's beyond. So, then he asks the question, why are you pretending to be a son? The answer is to give the wealth of ecstasy for those persons who are surrendered. Well, okay, so then he goes into a very long explanation, which we already know about. And the conclusion of that is, if I wish, I can kill all the demons in a single moment. The real reason I perform many activities is to give pleasure to my devotees. All my desires are at once fulfilled. It is to fulfill my devotees' desires I take birth again and again in this world. So that's Krishna. He's coming here just to please his devotees. And then he quotes from, Jiva Goswami is quoting from many sources to prove this. Oh, now here's a very nice example of that we can relate to in our lives. Because it said that the Lord comes to remove the burden of the material world and, you know, Puritanaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chidushkitam. But actually it's only to please the devotees. So now here's a really good example of how that happens. It says, when he comes here, he's not mixed with the modes of Maya. So then the question comes, well, how do the activities of maintenance manifest? Taking the sides of demons and devotees. This is all the work of Maya. So it happens naturally. Now here's an example. So actually the Lord comes, when he comes for his devotees, but other things automatically happen when he comes. It means the maintenance automatically happens. All these things are automatic. So this example we can relate to. In this material world, some devotees get together, this is Jiva Goswami, to give pleasure to the Lord, and for their own pleasure they start performing Sankirtan. You've done that, right? For doing Sankirtan, they need a mridanga player. So they catch any person who knows how to play mridanga, and with him they start kirtan and perform wonderful Sankirtan. You got the picture? And they become completely mad due to ecstasy of love of Godhead. They dance, they sing, and they cry. When they are doing Sankirtan, their purpose is service to the Lord, and they are themselves completely absorbed in the bliss of love of Godhead. But nonetheless, automatically, the inauspiciousness of the material world is destroyed. An auspicious atmosphere is created. But this isn't their ultimate purpose. They do it only to please the Lord, but as a byproduct of Sankirtan, auspiciousness comes. So that is compared to when Krishna comes to this world. That automatically the demons are killed and the maintenance is carried on. He comes here to please his devotees. Automatically everything else happens. He doesn't have to come here for that. So, in summary, now we're ending the philosophy part. Sanatana Goswami says, Brahma summarizes the insignificance of knowledge and greatness of devotional service, which have been established beginning with the verse Gyane Prayasam Udapasya. And that's this next verse is the summary, verse 38. Janantaiva janantu kim bahukyana me prabho manasova pishovacho vaibhavam tavagochara. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh, my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they're all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So pick out something here from Sanatana Goswami. Oh, okay, the first paragraph. Three ways to understand the purpose of this statement. First, he's declaring unimportance of Gyan and superiority of Bhakti. Second, he began his prayers focusing on the supreme object of praise, the transcendental form of the personality of Godhead. As his prayers went on, he digressed to deal with various doubts. Now, having subtly justified his aim of glorifying Krishna's opulence, he's returning to his original topic. Or, third, after drinking from the vast nectar ocean of glories of the Lord and Brijbasis, Brahma cannot help but laugh at those who think they know those glories. The three ways to understand this verse. The first one, unimportance of Gyan, Brahma addresses the seekers of knowledge. He ironically encourages them to pursue that goal if that is what they want. Okay, go after your knowledge. He has no desire to argue with them or spend any more time proving bhakti more important than Gyan. But it's just inconceivable beyond him. So then he goes into the other understandings. Okay. So then in Krishna book, Prabhupada writes it very beautifully. I have nothing to say about people who advertise they have already realized God, or by their realization they have themselves become God. As far as I'm concerned, so these are the people he's talking to now. Those who think they are God, or they have realized God. As far as I'm concerned, I admit frankly, for me it is not possible to realize you by my body, mind, or speech. What can I say about you, or how can I realize you by my senses? I can't even think of you perfectly with my mind, which is the master of the senses. Your qualities, activities, and body cannot be conceived by any person in this material world. Only by your mercy can one understand to some extent what you are. Okay, let's see if Sachinanda Swami has a jewel for us here on this verse. Oh, Brahma is now in mixed emotions. One side of him says, let me pray some more. And the other side says, I'm too unqualified to stay at this holy place. And so there's a pull there in Brahma's mind at this point. And so after offering the prayers, he gave this conclusion. This is in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyway, I'll just summarize it because we're running a little short. That what to speak of Krishna, even Vrindavan, I can't understand. It's only 32 miles, but all the Vaikuntha planets and universes are in one corner of this Vrindavan. So Krishna says, your universe has a diameter of 4 billion miles, so it's the smallest of all the universes, so you only have four heads. Some of the universes are 1 billion yojanas in diameter, some 1 trillion, some 10 trillion, some 100 trillion yojanas. Can you imagine that? Can't even imagine 4 billion. No, 100 trillion. It's about the same for us. 100 trillion. And according to the size of the universe, there are so many heads. Oh, did you get that? 4 billion means four heads. 100 trillion means a lot of heads. 100 trillion? Or almost. Give or take a trillion. Anyway, no one can measure it. Now we will go to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, a conversation. Here Shri Krishna might say, O Brahma, if this is true, please tell me, how many wise philosophers are there like you who can so brilliantly explain everything about my transcendental form, my Braj devotees, my pastimes, and my devotional service? Fearing Shri Krishna might say this, Brahma speaks this verse with shame, fear, and repentance. Verse 38. Shame, fear, and repentance. Bhayanakaras. Krishna protests, if that is so, why have you spoken all these words? Brahma replies, Kim Bahuktya, what is the use of all my words? Speaking too much in your presence is simply a sign of my foolishness. Krishna says, my dear Brahma, you are trying to cheat me with your words. And Brahma says, although I've meditated on them, my mind has no power to understand your opulences. My eyes cannot grasp your form, and my words cannot describe you. As I said previously, who can possibly count your unlimited transcendental qualities? So, this is Brahma's bhava at this point. Throwing away all his presumptuous identification as Lord of the Universe, he speaks the next verse. 39. Anujani himam krishna sarvam tam vetsu savaje tameva jagatam nato jagare tatavarpitam. My dear Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes, and yet I offer this one universe to you. I had a thought this morning when I read this verse, one of those crazy thoughts. If Brahma offered the whole universe, it means the whole universe is offered. It's all prashad. Isn't that? He offered the whole universe to Krishna. Just yeah, we're all offered. Yeah, well, it's just like some devotees. We go on book distribution or a paraphernalia distribution. They'd walk into the supermarket and offer the whole supermarket to Krishna and say it's prashad, and then they could eat whatever they wanted from the whole shop. Supermarkets are huge in America, you know. I know. Probably had to make some conditions there in their offering. They would just offer the whole supermarket.
So we also offer to Krishna?
Yes. Isn't that nice? I got that thought this morning. Yeah.
Also, since all many Brahmas are probably coming to Raj, all the universes are probably piled somewhere in the garbage pile.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. All the universes are coming to Braj. So here in the purport, he quotes Krishna book, my dear Lord, although you are the supreme Lord of all creation, I sometimes falsely think I am the master of this universe. I may be master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are also innumerable Brahmas reside over these universes, but actually you are the master of them all. As a super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope you'll excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you'll kindly allow me, I'll immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. So at the end it says, he was not eager to give up the Lord's association, but he felt it better to return to his personal devotional service in Brahmaloka. Somewhat embarrassed and unhappy over his foolish attempt at bewildering the Lord, Brahma preferred to resume his transcendental loving service rather than try to enjoy the Lord's presence. So that's quite nice. When Prabhupada was here, we were all trying to enjoy Prabhupada's presence. But we couldn't do that. We had to go and do our service. Always. In Jananivas, he was always with Radha Madhava. He could never leave. And one time he got away to Calcutta to go for Rath Yatra, the first Rath Yatra. And as soon as he got there, he got a phone call from the pujari in Mayapur. Help! I don't know what to do! It's 10 o'clock and I didn't wake up the deities yet. So I told Jananivas he had to turn around and go right back. So sometimes our service calls and we can't enjoy where we want to be, can't be where we want to be, where we think we should be. So let's see. Now that Brahma's prayers, this is Brihad Bhagavatamrita, have evoked the Lord's mercy, Brahma's false conception of being Lord of the universe has been erased, and he has achieved the priceless treasure of utter humility. Thus he considers himself unfit to stay near the Brijbasis very long, fearing he might commit more offenses. He requests permission to return to his own home. And that's why it's recommended people should not stay in Vrindavan more than 3 days. So, it goes on here. So many ways to understand this verse. I can't read all of them. Krishna might ask Brahma, why you want to leave just after praying for a birth in Braj? Why not simply stay here and delight my ears with more descriptions of Braj's glories? Brahma answers, Krishna knows everything. It would be difficult for Brahma in his present four-headed body to stay in Braj, and very difficult to change his body before his destined two-paradha life is finished. So if the four heads wouldn't fit in Braj, and it's also he can't change his body because he has such a long life. Thus Krishna knows Brahma in his present life will not get the opportunity to bathe in the dust of the feet of the residents of Braj. And Krishna knows how embarrassing it would be for Brahma to try to describe the glories of those great devotees, a task for which Brahma is altogether unfit. And so, but anyway, he's disturbing his pastimes at the same time. He's keeping them away from his friends. So better I just go away, as Prabhupada said in Krishna book. He's keeping him away from his, Krishna away from his cowherd boyfriends. So better he just goes back. And let's see, anything new here? Ooh, Brahma is quite a state. Embarrassed, distraught, and incapable of answering any more, Brahma requests, please give me permission to leave. As I am most fallen, I should go to a suitably fallen place like Brahma Loka. Brahma Loka. Oh Lord, please attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan. I have prayed to be a blade of grass. You have not responded even by so much as a glance. So what more shall I do standing here? So it's like, okay, he said all these beautiful prayers. Krishna's not even looking at him. Better I quickly go away. I have become an offender, interrupting your lunch pastimes. So I could not taste the nectar of even one word from your lips. So I'll quickly depart and go away. Please reclaim your calves. Finish your pastimes with your dear friends, joking and laughing with them on the riverbank. Why should I recklessly repeat my request again and again? So Brahma is in quite a... what more beautiful prayers could you say? And Krishna's not even looking at him. So the last verse. Shri Krishna Vishnu Kula Pushkara Joshadayam Shamanu Charadishapashuta Vivitikarim Uttaramashavaraharakshtirakshasatru Akapamarkamaham Bhagavanamaste. My dear Shri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vishnu dynasty and expand the great oceans consisting of the earth, the demigods, the Brahmins, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of your religion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists, and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. So this is the summary of everything, this verse. And interesting in the purport, he's talking about in how Krishna expertly suppressed the demoniac population of the earth. In modern society, there are many so-called God-fearing people who are actually attracted to demonic existence. Such persons become enlivened with the setting of the sun, go out in the darkness to enjoy life in restaurants, nightclubs, discotheques, hotels, and so on. And so then it goes on. But Krishna came to finish all this demoniac, and he has come even now. According to Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, Lord Brahma, in his shame, felt himself to be like a Brahma Rakshasa from Satyaloka, who had come to the earth to disturb Lord Krishna and his intimate friends and calves. Brahma Rakshasa. My gosh. So this is how Brahma is feeling right now. But Vishwanath Chakravarti concludes, may these prayers of Brahma, which take away all doubts and broadcast all definitive conclusions of devotional service, become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness. Okay, let's see out of 5 pages what little... Oh, yeah. Okay. Actually, I think this is even more nicely described in by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, how he's the sun and how he's the moon. And that is... One of the eyes of Krishna is the sun, and the other eye is the moon. So, Vrishni Kula Pushkara Joshadayin, as a son, you make the lotus flower of the Vrishni dynasty bloom and fill them with joy. Now, his left eye is the original form of the moon. It says, moon who expands the ocean to nourish all the inhabitants of earth, demigods in Swargaloka, and birds and cows in Vrindavan, please mercifully expand the good fortune of me, the lowest of the demigods. So I'm included in the demigods, so moon is for me. But at the beginning, O Lord, if you don't want to speak to me because I'm an offender, at least show me some mercy, giving the nectar of your glands. By drinking this nectar, I'll be able to maintain my life for the rest of the kalpa. And so he was just waiting. That's why he's praising the sun and the moon. It's the two eyes. He's waiting for the glands. He didn't get the glands. And so he said, well, you know, you've killed many demons like Agastya, and you gave them residence in your own spiritual abode. And I'm also a demon too. I'm a Brahma Rakshasa. So you should also do that for me. Purify me with punishment. If he sees his master is either merciful or cruel, the servant is encouraged to continue living. But if he sees his master is indifferent and does not care at all, a servant no longer desires to maintain his life. And so let me beg forgiveness. So then another thing is the arka. Arka is a lowly arka tree. And so he's offering obeisances, including your gunja necklace, other ornaments, and even the lowly arka tree. You know the arka tree in Vrindavan. It still grows. I think it's that one that has purple flowers that aren't really flowers. They're like hard as a rock, these flowers, and no smell.
One is right here?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, they grow wild. And they have leaves. They're poisonous. It's a poisonous tree, actually. And white sap comes out of it. It's actually poison if you eat it. He's praising the arka tree. Arka, beginning from arka. But also arka means sun. So he's just begging, just at least look at me. Give me your glance. Do something so I know something. And so he's just waiting for that glance. And according to Garga Samhita, Brahma is crying. He's bowing down, begging forgiveness. When will I take birth among the residents of these cowherd villages? So then Narada says, then he circumambulated Krishna and he offered it, and circumambulated three times, becoming invisible and then offering blessings to the calves and boys, grandfather Brahma asked permission to leave. With a glance, Krishna gave his permission. So he got the glance to leave. Yes, you may leave. He gave permission to leave with his glance. Then Brahma bowed again and returned to his own world. Okay, that was a lot today. Any questions or comments on these last verses of Brahma's prayers? And then tomorrow will be the rest of the Leela, where Krishna and the cowherd boys are united, reunited. Of course, they were together always, but they will go back to their homes and everything. That will start tomorrow. Any questions? Any more? Any questions or comments on these prayers of... Yeah?
Why did Krishna remain silent?
Yes, actually, that is given by some commentators. Reasons are given. I don't remember where. You remember Adipush? I remember Sanatana Goswami. There was two reasons that I remember. One reason is that he's angry. Oh, actually, here, look at this. I've got it from Nectar of Devotion. I think so, right here, which I didn't read because I thought we didn't have enough time. But I guess Krishna wants to hear this quality of him. This is, where is it? Nectar version. Here. Yes. Oh, yes. It's quality number 50, the Supreme Controller. Nectar version, chapter 22. There are two kinds of controllers or lords. One who is independent is called controller, and one whose orders cannot be neglected by anyone is called a controller. So the quality of controller is independence. Srimad Bhagavatam says, although Kaliya was a great offender, Krishna still favored him by marking his head with his lotus feet. Whereas Lord Brahma, although having prayed to Krishna with so many wonderful verses, still could not attract him. This contradictory treatment by Krishna is just befitting his position, because in all the Vedic literature is described as the complete independent. The beginning of Bhagavatam is described as Swarat, which means completely independent. That is the position of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So he's independent, he favored Kaliya, and he didn't pay any attention to Brahma. His prayers didn't attract him at all. There's another reason given that I remember, and I can't remember where, from the Acharyas, is that Krishna was in the mood of a small boy, and the Acharyas always bring that point up. The Krishna says, I'm just a little coward boy, I don't understand what you're saying. So he was in that mood of, I'm just a little coward boy, and I don't understand a word you're saying. All these words about me, I'm just a little coward boy. That's another reason why he didn't reply, because he was in that mood of Gopal. Yeah, you remember anything more, Adi Purush? Rabbi Bhagavatamrita? Don't you know I know all of this already? Okay, another reason. So nectar devotion gives us one, he's independent controller. And then he's in the mood of a coward boy. And then another reason he was angry was Brahma. Mahavinder Puri, do you have your hand up for something? He reacted differently because Kaliya was not a devotee and Brahma was a devotee.
If you make a mistake.
Right. Kaliya was like ignorant to crush Brahma's pride. Well, it was not a purpose of the Leela. Yes?
Also, if you would not spend 1 second more than necessary.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
Outside of his loving exchange with
his brother. Yeah, he doesn't want to waste words because that will take time away from his cowherd boyfriends if he were to reply and all these things. It would take time away from his friends, and he wants to get back as soon as possible. That's a very nice... Sanatana Goswami says that? Okay. Sanatana Goswami says he didn't want to waste time. Words. Yes?
It's quite interesting to know that Brahma and Krishna is very polite, because if you tell him short, he said, please don't. Still listen to him.
Yeah, he did. Right. Yeah, Krishna was very polite, and he listened to all the prayers, at least. He's dying to go back, right. He gave respect to Brahma. That's true. He didn't want to waste his own words, but he did listen to Brahma. He did stay there and listen and patiently. Active listening. I don't think he was very active listening. Very. Also, I think in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, if I remember correctly, see, the whole point of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is who has the mercy, and Brahma was giving this as an example of why he doesn't have the mercy, that Krishna didn't even respond to him. When he was with Prahlad, in Prahlad Lila, Krishna was chastised by Nrisingadev, don't give such benedictions again. At least he was chastised, but in this Lila, he didn't even, second time, he didn't even speak. And Prabhupada, when he would get angry, the servant would say there's three different levels of anger, and the worst one was when he wouldn't speak to you. That was the worst level of anger. When he would chastise, that was better, but if he just didn't speak, that was... Then you know he's really angry. Yes?
Yeah, Brahma initially took the position that either punish me or forgive me. And then later on...
He said, forgive me.
So he got the punishment part of...
He got the punishment. And that's actually the way Brahma... I mean, it's on his level. Because remember when the, of course, this is going to happen in the later on Leela, I think 88th chapter, when they send Bhrigu to test. And how did he test Brahma? He just neglected him. That's how he tested Brahma, and Brahma got so angry because he was neglected by his son, Bhrigu. So Krishna is doing that. He's neglecting. I mean, this is how to deal. It's more on a very subtle level, Brahma. It's like with Shiva, he was physical. He was verbal. He was verbal. Yeah. But the worst offense was to Vishnu. He was physical. Anyway, but Brahma's level is on the very subtle. And so, what a thing is just not to speak to him. Not even look at him. Well, fine, he looked at him. But wow, what it took to get that glance. Just look at me. I mean, that was his last prayer. His last prayer was, please, give me your glance, please. So I can remember that glance for the rest of the kalpa. Because what's happening the rest of the kalpa, their incarnations will come, but it won't be Krishna. It won't be so sweet. Okay, last, you had a question, and then we have to... No, okay. So all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Okay, Yashoda. Is it ever rectified? Yes. In Chaitanya Leela. In Chaitanya Leela, they're reunited. In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, everything is, he repays his debt, and then he also lovingly takes care of Haridas Thakur, who's supposed to be Brahma Haridas. It's a very loving relationship with Haridas Thakur. He even after he dies, he performs his death ceremony. So yes, it's everything is reconciled in Gaur Leela. So we'll have to keep going to get the reconciliation, the synthesis of everything in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Have to keep going after Bhagavatam. So otherwise we won't be satisfied. So many unanswered questions, unreconciled things only Gauranga can do. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.